The UN says that humanity stands on the brink of catastrophic man-made climate change. But is it true?
Not a chance. But we do stand on the brink of catastrophic government policies that threaten to ruin the nation our forefathers built and defended against tyranny.
So what drives the climate scare, Jay?
Besides simple ignorance, the scare is driven by corporate greed and the desire of government to control all aspects of our lives, Tom.
Is this part of something more sinister?
Indeed it is. Whether it's climate change or a pandemic or socialism, it really means sacrificing your rights and accepting the tyranny of the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy. It must be stopped.
This is The Other Side of the Story with Dr. Jay Lair and Tom Harris of the International Climate Science Coalition.
Our guest this week for the second time in a row is Cleveland-based Rich Kozlovich, who runs the blog Paradigms and Demographics, which you can see on the web at paradigmsanddemographics.blogspot.com. This is the first time we've had a guest on twice, and I think you'll see why. We are continuing a very important discussion about how China is infiltrating the United States and indeed many countries across the world in their quest to become the world's leading nation by 2049. So welcome to the show, Rich.
Well, thank you for having me. I think it's a distinction to be the first double participant.
That's great.
I hope that quite a few of our listeners listened in last week or heard our podcast last week. But this show, when we talk about China, tends to be a little bit pessimistic. A lot of people think China's eating our lunch. They think they're going to take over the world and become the world's number one country. So I want to give our listeners a dose of optimism because I am very optimistic and I don't believe they are going to take over our nation or be the number one power in the world. They have really a small window of opportunity to do these things, because they have an administration in the United States today that is more friendly to China than they are to our own country. Most of our listeners know what's going on. Mr. Biden and his son have made a great deal of money investing in China. I think they're aware that a non-painter, Hunter Biden, is now painting things and selling them to undisclosed people for like $500,000. But my real optimism is based on the fact that in November of 2022, our country is going to take a poll about how we feel about this literally criminal presidency. And we are going to take back the House of Representatives in a landslide. I'll predict a 20-vote majority for the Republicans. Right now, the Democrats have a 3 or 4 vote majority. We will swamp them. And for listeners that don't understand, all financial aspects of our government, whatever decisions they decide, are controlled in the House of Representatives. So when we get the House back in November of 22, and I guarantee everybody on this listing that that will happen. There is no question about it. I think we'll take the Senate by a few votes, but we will swamp them in the House of Representatives. So as you hear things that sound pessimistic, as Rich tells you his knowledge of China, which is really quite amazing, I don't want you to be pessimistic at all. Listen and learn, but keep your spirits up. So, Rich, tell us very briefly how you became so interested in China and now have written numerous essays about China. And then tell us what you think are the major threats China poses to us. So the floor is yours, Rich.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned last week, when I was in the service, I worked in intelligence. I sat in the Gulf of Tonkin. I went up, I was part of that group that went up to pull the Pueblo out of North Korea, which never got done. But it was just the very, that kind of work. You've got an interest in what was going on. I've been to Hong Kong, and it was a fascinating, that's one of the reasons I'm glad we're going to talk about Hong Kong. It was a fascinating experience. But I read a book a number of years ago. The book is probably 20, 25 years old, Gun, Germs, and Steel, by a guy by the name of Jared Diamond. And he outlined a lot of things about China that were absolutely fascinating. They're just very different. They were way ahead of the rest of the world technologically. They lost all of that, and he went in as to why. And so much of that plays into a lot of the problems we're facing now. It was, in effect, too much government, bad administration, and all of these things. The fact of the matter is to some extent, admittedly, there's no emperors, there's no Mandarin class any longer, but they're just not called that. The fact of the matter is they operate on the same kind of principles. They have one guy that says everything is going to be done this way, and they have all these mandarins or bureaucrats, whatever you want to call them. They're instituting these policies, and they're dangerous, and they're foolish. The fact of the matter is I think that they're really dangerous, but the truth is I also think that they're somewhat suicidal. They're self-defeating. They do things a whole lot better than Russia did. The threats that we're facing are all being done. Have all been done. All this stuff has been going on for centuries. It's just now we have fabulous technology, and the Chinese just do it infinitely better than the Russians ever did. If you go back to the 1920s, after the Russian Revolution, Stalinist agents he sent them to America right away. And during the FDR years, the communist, Stalinist agents, socialists, fellow travelers, they permeated all of those agencies, including the OSS, which was the precursor to the CIA. And when it became the CIA, they migrated into it. So this whole infusion of communism and communist thinking and communist agents into our system, it is absolutely proven. We know that now from the Venona intercepts, when all these people, these code names came out. We know Joe McCarthy was right, although he really didn't know it himself. He was making it up as he was going along. We also know when the Soviet Union collapsed, and a lot of those records were opened up for a while, it substantiated all that. So this has been going on forever. The Chinese just do it much, much better than anybody else ever did. And one of the reasons why is we have so much technology, and our governmental philosophy isn't the same as it was back in those days. The House on Un-American Activities Committee, that started in 1933. And they were the ones that went after Hollywood, not Joe McCarthy. And so they had a different mentality about it than we do now. We have now been infiltrated at the university levels to a huge degree. They have all these different organizations their whole job is to infiltrate, promote propaganda, intimidate people in academia, in the newspaper business. Anybody that is an information deliverer or an educator or has any influence on the American economy, they're threatening them with financial issues or whatever it might be. And this Confucius Institute, that's nothing more than a tool of the Chinese Communist Party to promote propaganda and undermine the American culture, the American identity, and the American economy.
One of the things that really concerns me as a scientist is learning that they have been financing a great deal of research in American universities. A few years ago, somebody blew the whistle on some research going on in American universities financed by China, and our government requires that every university that accepts a grant of $250,000 must report it to the federal government. They weren't doing that. And once the federal government came out and said, all right, we want to know what you're getting, it turned out that $6.5 billion had been contributed primarily by China, some by Iran, to finance research into climate change, all of which had to show that man was causing climate change so they could inhibit the use of fossil fuels by our country, push them into wind and solar, which the Chinese know doesn't work, even though they manufacture the blades and the solar cells. Everything was aimed at undermining our progress, especially in the energy field. What do you think is going on there right now, Rich? Do you think we're going to be able to stop it, or will this continue at the university level?
At some point, it's all a matter of willpower. It's what you're willing to do. Is first, it has to be recognized. And now that's been exposed. We're having all these, and now there's this one high-ranking intelligence officer that has defected to the United States. And apparently, the amount of information that he has is startling. And they came up with a few articles when it happens, and they have just shut that down. I haven't seen another thing about it. And I'm just wondering what's going on there. But the fact is it can be, all of this can be stopped. All it takes is willpower. You have to recognize it, define it, say, this is the problem, and we're going to stop this. The reality is, as long as the Biden administration is there, there's nobody going to stop it. How do you do law enforcement with people when the law enforcement people are violating the law? You know, it's certainly in violating the principles that they've sworn to uphold. That becomes a problem. But yes, it can be stopped. It's just a matter of willpower. It's willingness to step up and say, this is wrong, and we're not going to tolerate this anymore. The fact of the matter is they need to get rid of these people that are coming here as spies. I did some work here on, you know, do you know there's over 500 Confucius Institutes around the world? And every one of them are designed to undermine the countries that they're in, to support policies that are favorable to China and unfavorable to any place else. There's something called a Chinese Student Scholars Association, and they actually intimidate the leaders of these institutions into going along with not promoting anything that's detrimental to China, including not permitting prominent speakers to come and speak there, provided they're not going to say, if they're going to say things that's detrimental to what China thinks should be said. Somebody has claimed, whether this is true or not, that they have influenced leftists who are involved in unions that are actually taking positions now that are detrimental to the membership, but it is favorable to China. So we're having all these things are going on, and they all can be stopped. It's just a matter of saying, yes, this is what's happening. We believe this is what's happening, and we're not going to tolerate it. If you're not willing to do that, nothing can be stopped.
Now, can you tell us what are the Confucius Institutes? I mean, I know that they're a front group for the Communist Party of China, but what are they officially?
That's what like the Chinese Student Scholars Association. These are Chinese students that are at these universities, and they're not only being funded by the Chinese authorities, they're telling them what they're going to do. One of the points that was made about it is there have been many cases where the CSSA threatened the academic freedom in the countries they're at.
What's CSSA?
It's a Chinese Students and Scholars Association. Okay. So, which I think is kind of an interesting.
Are the Confucius Institute some sort of a cultural thing? Is that the excuse they use for getting them into universities?
Well, they get in and then they form these, the way I understand it is they get into these universities and then they form these groups. You know, they're almost like a student union, only nobody has any control of them except the Communist Party of China. You know, one of the things that talking about this infiltration is that one of the questions you asked, did I think that they had an effect on the 2020 election? First of all, everybody plays that game everywhere in the world. All the big players do anyway. But in this case, I don't really think they had much impact in spite of all the propaganda, all the effect they had on the social media and the newspapers, I don't think what they did had much of an effect. The whole fact of the matter is I keep reading these things about what Trump did wrong here. The fact of the matter is it was all voter fraud. It was massive and it was ubiquitous. As a result, I don't really think the Chinese had much influence, but along with what I was already saying is they play the long game. They're not, whether they worked for this time or not is meaningless to them so much as what's going to happen in 2022, 2024, 2026, 2028, and so on. If they have all these kids completely indoctrinated, they're looking at the long-term election process. And did they affect 2020? Only in the sense that it was laying the groundwork for future efforts.
I agree with you that they're looking at the long game, but again, sounding another optimistic alarm, they're not influencing enough young minds at the university level to influence the 2022 election. Rank and file Americans that are, our regular people are fed up with what's going on in this administration, and we will swamp them in the House. But you're right, they are playing the long game. Well, I want to move away for a moment from this country, Rich, and talk about what they're doing in developing countries. My understanding is they're loaning huge amounts of money to countries that really can't afford to give the money back, which is going to kind of put them in a driver's seat in a lot of things going on in less developed countries.
That's exactly what they're doing. Montenegro took I think it was a $6 billion loan. It's a multi-billion dollar loan from them to build a bridge, which hasn't been built. There's this email group I belong to, and they said, and they showed the agreement. This is, why would any country agree to? My thought was, well, what's China going to do? Attack Montenegro if they don't pay them back? Well, no, that's not going to happen. And that's not the point. The point is they obligate these people all over the world so that they can influence them, extend their influence into Europe. And that's a growing issue. The influence they're trying to extend into Europe beyond Southeast Asia. And one of the reasons why, or two of the reasons, of course, is trade, one. And two, they want to get these people in a situation where they will support a lot of their claims, like they in effect, I don't know if you're still going to bring up about their honoring their agreements. They think they own the whole South China Sea. And of course, international bodies have said, no, you don't. And they says, well, we don't care what you say. We own it, and that's all there is to it. And of course, American ships go through there regularly to prove that's not true. But the point is this: they make all these agreements. They very often take over assets of these countries. And my thoughts always are, where did that money go? Clearly, it didn't go to what was intended for. They knew that these people certainly must have known they weren't going to be able to pay it back. So I believe they thoroughly corrupted leadership in a lot of these countries, and they put these countries in a bind so that they can push them in the directions that they want to go, allowing them to build bases. And there was an effort for the Chinese to build this a huge naval base in the Indian Ocean. And I forgot, I want to say Bangladesh. I may be mistaken about that, but that's the whole key. And one of the reasons for that is the Malay Straits bringing oil through there. They want to be able to protect that because that's a choke point for their energy problems. They don't have oil. They got tons of coal. They don't have oil. And so they're trying to work all these deals with all these people so that they can have influence and power. You mentioned one time about the Five Eyes project, Tom. That's an intelligence sharing thing. And the problem is you getting everybody on board with shaming them when some of them don't want to do it. New Zealand is an example. I think it's something like 35% of their exports go to China, and they don't want to jeopardize that because they saw what happened when Australia buckled them. They put restrictions on it. So that's a growing problem. The economic situation throughout Southeast Asia is tied to a lot of the things that China is doing, and they're getting away with it now because Trump's gone. And as Jay said, there's this window of opportunity. And the truth of the matter is, if you don't take advantage of a window when it opens, it may close and never open again. And I believe that's to be the case. There is a lot of negatives involved here, but I've said this before and I say it again. Time is not.
Let me throw another positive in here that people are not aware of. You talk about what they're doing in the South China Sea, the Malaysian Straits. But there's one thing people need to know. China does not have any more friends in the South China Sea. They have no neighbors that like them. They are also losing a lot of business. Where China used to be, you know, the cheap labor, that labor is going to Vietnam and Laos and other countries as well. So everything is not wonderful for China. And even brings us back to the point about that window of opportunity. Whatever they're going to accomplish, they better accomplish, frankly, in the next 14 months. I think this whole thing is, the whole pendulum is going to swing the other way in November of 2022. And people need to understand that. I just hate to see the pessimism all around me. There is not a day going by that I don't overhear a pessimistic comment from a stranger that I'm near, and I jump right in and explain that they really aren't going to get anywhere with that attitude. There's real cause for optimism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jay and Rich, I'm hoping we can just take a step backwards and give our listening audience some history here as to how the Communist Party took over China back in 1949 and what happened to the original Chinese government.
Well, first of all, the emperor was overthrown by the nationalist Chinese, and that Communist Party in China was formed in 1921. They weren't successful. The nationalist Chinese they started out kind of together, and then they were kicked out, and then they had this big war and this big battle. Then the Japanese attacked. And actually, Mao thought that was a good thing because that tied up, because he was taking a beating from the national government. And he felt that was an opportunity for him to get more powerful because they'd be tied up fighting the Japanese. And at one point he's saying, you know, the Chinese shouldn't be killing Chinese. We should both be fighting the Japanese. And, you know, after it's all over, we'll get along, and which was an absolute lie. And there's a lot of indication that he was actually getting support from there was some involvement between him and the Japanese. So everything that Mao did, and Mao was not that popular amongst his peers at that point. And there was one effort that they were maybe going to pick somebody else to run everything, and the Russians really weren't pleased with him. I was always amazed at how he managed to survive that whole thing, because he was really unbearable even in the early years before he became the power. And then afterwards, they revolted, or they continued their warfare against nationalist Chinese. And the real problem, in my opinion, was Chiang Kai-shek. You don't read much about it, but at one point he administered the country so badly with the corruption, and it was just a mess. And people were they were printing money left and right. Inflation skyrocketed. So they said, okay, well, listen, this is not working. So turn in your money for new money. And what we'll do is bring in all the wealth, we'll bring in all the gold and treasures, and that will be the basis for the new money. And we're not going to just keep printing money. That'll be the basis for it. So people turned all this stuff in. They accepted new money for it. They accepted some portion for their old money. And what did Chiang Kai-shek do? He printed money, just kept printing money. And he bankrupted the middle class. So he caused a lot of problems. And when he fled to Taiwan was called Formosa at the time. When he fled China, they had all these ships where he and his people went, and all that treasure went with them. And there was so much treasure, there was too much treasure, not enough ships, and he left some of his people sitting on the beach at the tender mercy of the communists. Chiang Kai-shek was painted as the good guy back in the 50s. He was not a good guy by any stretch of the imagination. And the truth be told is, if he hadn't been such a bad leader, the communists may not have been able to overcome him. And of course, the communists promised the world, and then they delivered dystopia and misery even worse than Chiang Kai-shek. But he bears a lot of the responsibility for the communists taking over China.
As we reach the end of the first segment of our show, everybody, when we come back, I would like to hear where Hong Kong fits in all this. We read a lot about it. We know that England had control of Hong Kong up till 1997, and then it reverted to Chinese rule. And it's a very hot spot in the world, and how China deals with it seems to be an important issue. And let's take that up when we begin the second part of our show today.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Rich, I think that Hong Kong is today a real mystery to our average listeners. They may recall that Hong Kong had, I think, a 100-year contract for England to rule it, and then it reverted to China. They took it back in 1997, and they were, you know, going to kind of keep things humming as they were, an incredibly successful economic city-state. That has not worked out. Little by little, China is creeping in and taking over control, and along the way, hurting their economy. What do you think the future is with them in Hong Kong? And one of the things that concerns me is their heavy-handed approach to Hong Kong may hurt China on the world stage.
I agree. This goes along with, does China honor its agreements? They only honor agreements when it's convenient, and when it ceases to be convenient, they stop honoring them. So what was inconvenient about Hong Kong? Hong Kong was a big moneymaker for them. That was a lot of capital coming through there. It was allegedly supposed to be the one country, two systems arrangement. And Hong Kong was going to continue on pretty much as it was, with some changes naturally. But for the most part, they weren't really going to interfere with them. But that agreement originally was made in 84, I guess it was, with Deng Xiaoping. And he's gone. And this Xi is a tyrant. And his concern, because he's a control freak, he wants to control everything. And his concern, and the concerns of those around him apparently, were that this whole business with Hong Kong would become infectious with the rest of China. And they wanted to put it to a stop. Somehow they believe that they can control Hong Kong and still control the capital that was coming out of there. And that's not going to happen. Ultimately, everyone becomes aware you simply can't trust China. You can't, no matter what agreements they make, they will renege on them at some point. And with Hong Kong, I got to believe the big money is fleeing Hong Kong. The people, the investors, and all these foreign nationals that were there, I got to believe they're fleeing, and the money's going with them. Because the truth of the matter is, nobody can trust any agreement they make with the Chinese government. They're kidnapping people. They're throwing people in jail. They're destroying the infrastructure that made Hong Kong work. Well, once that happens, it doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. General Secretary Xi Jinping, he said Hong Kong continues to have a high degree of autonomy. Is that really true anymore, or are they losing that?
That's baloney. The fact of the matter, it's baloney. They changed how many people can be in the government. They changed who those people are going to be. They're all puppets of the Chinese Communist Party, and they're doing a lot of things that were completely out of harmony with the 84 agreement. So when they talk about autonomy, that's like saying that China's free. You know, it isn't. Any autonomy they have is all predicated on whether the Chinese Communist Party is going to allow it or not. That doesn't make it autonomous.
Well, it's even worse than that, Rich and Tom. Let me tell you a little more. I've traveled a lot in China. They're a bigger evil empire than anyone could imagine. And what I'm about to tell you is even hard to believe, but it's true. There are 600 million cameras in China recording the goings and comings of all their citizens. They have perfect facial recognition. That's hard to believe. Of, you think, a billion people, but it's really only a half a billion people that live on the coast and have a reasonable standard of living. They have essentially ignored a half a billion that live inland and scratch out a very little agricultural living of food and housing. And they give everybody in the half along the coast a social score based on what they see them doing on 600 million cameras. And that determines what little freedom they have. It determines their comings and goings. It's absolutely unbelievable what an evil empire they are. But again, I don't think there will be a war there. I don't think the people will ever get strong enough to have a revolution. But you can certainly see that it's not as bad as North Korea, which has 26 million people essentially in prison and near starvation. It certainly isn't that way in China, but it's not a happy people. And the rare occasion when somebody comes forward from China to the United States and tells you what life is like, it just couldn't be worse.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rich, one of the things that the high tech companies like Sun Microsystems and, you know, various other ones, they thought that by selling servers and other high tech equipment to China, it would help democratize them. But has that really happened?
If they really believed that, they were delusional. It's the same kind of mentality as when they were even spouting it in 2005 is, you know, bring China more into the commercial market and trade and all of this, and they'll become civilized members of the international community. They just don't. What fascinates me is these are supposed to be policy wonks. These are supposed to be people that have high degrees of education. Didn't they ever read a history book? China is not that way. They don't think that way. They don't see the world the way everyone else does. They really believe they should be controlling the world. And they know in order to do that, they have to overcome the United States economically and militarily. And once again, time is not on their side.
Yeah, well, they seem to assume that this fairness doctrine that we have in the West would apply and the Chinese would accept that as the norm. But what we're doing is it's a bit of cultural imperialism, isn't it? We're assuming the Chinese think like we do when we make agreements with them.
It's funny. I just had this conversation with my son. I says, the problem with American policy is we are lousy occupiers. I says, the fact of the matter is we think if we explain everything to everybody, they'll think just like us. Well, That's not the way the world works. If you could take those people and bring them and put them in the United States, yes, it would work because the social paradigm allows it to work. But the social paradigms in these countries are radically different than anything we understand. The fact of the matter is, and I keep saying this over and over again, is the United States is an incredibly unique nation in all of world history. If for no other reason, we actually believe we have a right to own property. You know, it's the only nation that was actually built from the ground up instead of the top down. All the other nations had kings, they had emperors, they had whatever. So when you see socialism and communism taking hold in these places, it's not so out of their social paradigm that they don't understand it, because whether it was a king or a dictator, the guy at the top was doing all the thinking and everybody else was doing all the doing. And that's so these things... That's the social paradigm in the vast majority of the world. And Americans just don't seem to understand that. And truth of the matter is, I've been guilty of it in the past myself. You know, I always thought, well, geez, all we have to do is explain it to them. They'll get it. No, they're not going to get it. In these Muslim countries, we spent an enormous amount of money to give them the right to vote. And who did they vote in? People just like the ones we kicked out. So, Americans don't get that, and we need to learn and understand that people aren't going to just do things because we do them and we think we do them better than everybody, and we pretty much do, but they have their own social paradigms that has been there for hundreds of years, and that's not easily shaken.
Can we talk a little bit about the hacking? You know, the idea that these hackers are funded largely and directed largely by the Communist Party of China. You know, the Five Eyes that we talked about earlier, they were naming and shaming. But does that really have any impact, or should we be hacking them back?
Well, the fact is, I've said this before, this kind of stuff has gone on for centuries. The only difference is we have big time technology. So once somebody starts this kind of thing, everybody starts doing it because they have no choice. Back in I want to say the guy's name, the senator, his name was Simmons, back in the pre-World War II period. He thought it was just terrible that we were listening in on other people's coded messages. He says, you know, it's terrible. We don't read other people's mail. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you didn't read their mail, you wouldn't know the terrible things they were going to do. I can tell you right now that anybody that is sending secret messages, everybody in the world wants to know what it is. Because if you have a secret, they figure it must be worth knowing. And the reality is if you start hacking, everybody else is going to start hacking. And sometimes the first people starting it aren't the ones who are going to win in the end, because everybody else is going to start realizing they have to really get on top of this. And if they're not doing it already, I can assure you they will be doing it. That's history.
So we should hack them back is basically
they're not going to have a choice. They're not going to have any choice. That is always the trend. You send a spy to us, we send a spy to you. You listen to our messages, we'll listen to your messages. You hack our stuff, we'll hack your stuff. It's the part of the break game.
The announcement from the Five Eyes intelligence people, name and shame. I thought that was pretty naive. I mean, Chinese really care about that?
The Chinese are actually pretty thin-skinned. Yeah, it's kind of a yes and no. Yes, that they care about it because it makes them look bad. No, they're going to do what they want anyway.
Would you explain what the Five Eyes are? I'm sure their listeners don't know what we're talking about when we say Five Eyes.
Well, that's an agreement between the English-speaking democracies, the United States, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and
Canada.
Yes, it is Canada.
That's an intelligence sharing. That's a group that they share all this intelligence, supposedly, about what's going on. And the idea is once they know these things, then they would expose it to the world. But there's I don't know how much sharing is really going on, and I don't know how much harmony they have and how much of it they're willing to expose. And that's always the case. And it's an economic issue too. So I don't know how well that's actually working.
I want to jump into the energy area first by telling our listeners something I've said in earlier programs that warrants repeating. That is that Rich mentioned property. We are the only country in the world that when you own property, you own the minerals underneath that property. We're really the only country in the world that has property rights across the board, which, as Rich said, really separates us from all the other countries that were run by kings that owned everything. But those property rights have really made us the leading nation in energy. We developed the fracking, hydraulic fracking, and shale gas revolution, and we were able to develop it because when you own the property, you want people to come in and drill wells on your property, because if they discover oil and gas, you get a royalty. In every other country, you don't own the property. You don't own the minerals under the property, so you're not asking the government to come in and drill on your land. So we are basically a decade or more ahead of the rest of the world in the shale gas revolution, because having property rights, owning the mineral rights, has really advanced the whole concept. Where does China stand on energy with regard to the energy we have and the energy they don't have, and the reason they're trying to push wind and solar on us while they develop the materials for it, they really don't use it at all. I believe they're building a new coal-fired power plant, at least one a week. China is pushing us to use wind and solar by encouraging the global warming fraud. What is their real energy situation in terms of how much they have and how little they have and what they have to do to stay afloat from an energy standpoint?
Well, we talked about this before. They have very little or no oil. They have to transport oil in from all over the world. They've made agreements even with Venezuela, whose oil is so bad, almost nobody wants it. But they do have tons of coal. And what they're doing is they're building coal fire plants on a regular basis. They have a lot of coal fire plants, which of course they're not putting on. And coal fire plants in the United States, we have environmental controls to, protect against all that pollution. And it works pretty good. In China, they're not doing that. The pollution in China is staggering. So they would love nothing better for the United States to be drop our coal processes, our oil, natural gas, and adopt wind and solar as our primary energy sources, because they know it. If they thought it worked, why aren't they doing it? And they're not. The fact of the matter is, if they are doing any of it, it's all for show. Energy, alternative energy, is a loser. And the other part that always drives me nuts is I keep hearing about, well, we could do this or we do that. The fact of the matter is it's not reliable. It can't handle peak loads. And there's always a traditional electric plant up and running as a backup. And electric, you just don't shut, it's not like a light switch. You don't just turn them on and turn them off. They have to run at certain temperatures all the time because they have to cool down very slowly and they have to heat up very slowly. So they never shut down. So we're paying for energy that we don't need and energy we don't want. And they want us to abandon the traditional energy sources because if we don't have inexpensive, readily available energy, we don't have an economy. And that's what they want. They want to be able to destroy the American economy.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rich, I'm getting the sense that China is becoming much, much more aggressive. And you may have heard of this activist, Jennifer Zeng. Jennifer Zeng has a video. She calls it Inconvenient Truth. It's put out on YouTube. I'll include a link under this show. And one of her videos put out on the 15th of July is, it's called this, Nuke and Eliminate Japan, the CCP's threat and its long-term goal and global strategy. Is it my imagination or is China becoming a great deal more aggressive? And is this threat to nuke Japan, drop nuclear bombs on Japan if they interfere with the CCP's attempts to take over Taiwan? Is this all part of an increasing aggression on the part of China?
It's an aggressive rhetoric. No question. They want to intimidate everybody. The downside for the China is they're forcing the Japanese into restructuring their Article 9 of their constitution regarding self-defense. And there's even been talk in China of actually becoming have military nukes. So this is all going to backfire on them. They're aggressive where they can get away with it as they've done in the Himalayas, another agreement that they, international agreement they ignored. And they're aggressive in down around India's backyard in their oceans. They do minor aggressions. I call those object lesson wars. But are they going to use nukes on Japan? They have to know that's just not going to happen. The world would have to retaliate. And I just don't see that happening. There's a lot of talk. They're doing a lot of saber rattling. They're doing a lot of landings or practice landings. And they're adding ships to go here and go there. But the reality is none of this will work for them. If they're prepared to go to war, they have to be prepared to go to war big time, and they can't do it. They have a huge military, land military.
Yeah. But what do you think of Jennifer Zeng? I mean, she sounds like a pretty brave lady. She's known for her practice of Falun Gong, of course, which resulted in her being actually sent to a labor camp called the Beijing Municipal Women's Re-Education Shoot Through Labor Camp. Sounds very nice. But she says that at the camp, she was physically and mentally abused, subjected to attempted brainwashing, even faced electroshock treatment. So she strikes me as one very brave lady.
And more so when you realize that people, Chinese nationals that have gone and become members of citizens of other countries, that are speaking out against China have disappeared. Mm-hmm. And this has become a growing problem the West is becoming aware of because the Chinese attitude is, we don't care what your citizenship is, we own you and you're doing things we don't like, we're gonna do what we want to you. And now there's even some talk that they're doing that with non-Chinese people in a lot of these countries that are speaking out. So for this girl to stand up and say the things she's saying, and I have no doubt she knows that's a very real potential. I got to tell you, that is one gutsy lady.
Yeah, she's in the United States, fortunately. But of course, you in the United States, do you feel any physical threat at this point?
No.
Not me, yet.
Not me, no.
Yeah, okay.
The truth is the They're doing a lot of things, and I believe they're going to do a lot more things that are just as bad. But I, you know, taking me and taking a 75-year-old man and doing whatever to him really doesn't amount to anything. Maybe to me and my wife, but that's about it.
Yeah, right. Now, do you think the Chinese government respect the Biden administration?
No, I don't think anybody in the world does. I think they all know he's completely out of it. Everybody in the world knows that Harris is completely incompetent. Nobody knows who's really calling the shots. Nobody knows who's picking these people that they're sending up to Congress to be confirmed by the Senate. You know, there doesn't seem to be any. My guess is, I have no way of knowing this, but my guess is there's so much internal conflict, power struggling going on within the Biden administration that nobody has any idea what they're doing, and nobody in the world, because one of the things that we have to understand is world leaders know things that are not necessarily being touted in the media, and they know it's separate from the media, but they don't say anything. The world's leaders know what's going on in the Biden administration, and there's no reason to respect them. There's every reason to exploit them.
Mm-hmm. I went to a presentation a little while ago by an East Turkestan activist lady, and she was talking about the Muslims and the torture and everything else. And I asked her, I said, how can the average person oppose that? And she said, well, to the extent you can, try not to buy made in China products and tell the vendor why you're not buying it. Would you agree with that?
Well, I got to say, I'm probably as guilty as everybody is. I don't really pay attention where things are made. I think that would be a great thing if you could institute it, but it's not going to happen. You buy things, people buy things, I buy things, my wife buys things. And quite truthfully, I don't look to see where they're coming from. Although, if you could get everybody to join on board with that, that would be a good thing. But I don't really see it happening.
Yeah, I see.
Well, as a world leader in optimism, I'm always wanting to inject optimistic points. And since you brought up the fact that the Biden administration is not respected by any leaders in the world, and now people are talking about how long he will last, clearly with a certain level of dementia, and they're scared to death of Vice President Kamala Harris becoming president, that would make me even more optimistic. I have not run into anybody, including the most zealous Marxist Democrats, who actually like Mrs. Harris. And so I think that if she did come into the presidency, we might take the House of Representatives by more than a 20-vote majority. I think that she would be putting forth more platform positions for every Republican running for a House seat in the 2020 elections. What do you think, Rich?
Oh, I agree. The interesting thing is they keep talking about bringing in the 25th Amendment. There's another interesting article I read where they were talking about how there were Democrats who were trying to figure a way to get Nancy Pelosi to become president. Is what they would do is convince Biden to resign and convince Kamala Harris to resign, and he would appoint her as the head of some department, and then that would make Nancy Pelosi president. And my comment was, and did anybody ask Harris and Biden if they agreed with that? And that's not going to happen. And I think one of the reasons why you're not going to see them real quick to impose the 25th Amendment is I think they are more afraid of Kamala Harris being president than they are Trump.
Yeah. We have to end off now. And I'd like to ask, just to conclude our show, is China's rise to become the world's leading power unstoppable? Or is it something we can prevent?
Now, I keep saying this, and I really believe it. Time is simply not on their side. They have so many internal problems that they can't resolve. They have a demographic problem. They have an economic problem. They have, and as Jay said, all of their neighbors hate them. India doesn't like them. Russia's not that crazy about them, even though they're allegedly coming up with this deal where they're going to share naval forces in the South China Sea and in the Pacific. And I put that in the same category as the Holy Roman Empire that swore that they were going to help the Balkan princes against the Ottoman Empire. That didn't happen either. Russia has too many economic issues. They cannot afford to be throwing a ton of money into a big fleet over in the Pacific. So time is not on their side. They have too many problems. And as time goes by, they're making more and more enemies. Their credibility as far as the rest of the world goes is predicated on one thing, trade. And if that is shut down, they are done. And that was the thing that Trump understood. He understood, because I hear all this tariff talk, and I'm not a big tariff guy, but the reality is there's a difference between economic tariffs and political tariffs. And Trump understood that. And the fact of the matter is, you're seeing a huge, huge difference in the stand and positions that China is taking now than they were when Trump was president. And the reason why is because, once again, Biden is not respected, but he will be taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was great, Rich. So this is Tom and Jay signing out from the other side of the story. And I encourage people to look up Rich Kozlovich, his blog, Paradigms and Demographics, that you can see on the web at paradigmsanddemographics.blogspot.com. So thanks for being our guest twice, Rich.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.